The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Happy Saturday, everybody, the day before St. Patrick's Day. It's March the 16th, 2024. I'm Peter Boyle. It's good to have you here. 710 KNUS Weather Center weather, high 40s today, much the same tomorrow. And then on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the sun comes back. We've been getting lots of off-air stuff about our guest, and it's all been very good. However, we can say lines are open, and Jim Emery's kind enough to stay. He's cultural anthropologist. He's absolutely brilliant. He's been a longtime friend. And he did a lengthy piece on Ramadan and the idea of these three holidays or three time periods that take place as we speak, Easter, of course, and Passover and Ramadan. And I would suspect most people know the Easter story and Passover story, but very few Ramadan. And Ramadan is when, and I'll give it back to our expert, when the Quran is revealed, maybe that's the best way to say it.
No, that's a great term.
To the prophet Muhammad, and Muhammad is the last prophet.
Yes,
and there are, the sharing of Torah and Quran and Old Testament is the comparisons are there. So, to the audience, what do you think? Where does this lead you? And questions for Jim, because Jim is an amazing expert on this topic. Jimmy, tell folks how they can read that piece that you did.
Yeah, let me provide that. And this particular article is 8,100 words, but it's broken up into sections, so it's easy to read. I have different headings throughout. Basically, if they Google or do an internet search for my name, James Emery, E-M-E-R-Y, and then dash Eurasia Review, E-U-R-A-S-I-A, Eurasia Review. What they'll do is that'll show up on author page, and they'll find articles. They'll find this article. They'll find articles on Gaza, Afghanistan, Ukraine, Myanmar, and so forth there and on the page following. It's an author page. So they can find and the idea, one of the reasons I put this together is just as an anthropologist, one of the things we do is we try to work on situations to facilitate understanding using powers of discernment rather than judgmental approaches and looking for similarities and looking for understanding. So a lot of these I put together for people who are going to be working overseas or working in this case, Islamic communities here around the world. And it really helps where they better understand the beliefs and also cautionary, you know, obviously understanding that people are fasting during Ramadan.
It's incredibly intriguing. I don't know if there's one issue, but all of them placed together, the similarities are striking. All right, here we go to the phones. We'll begin. We have a line open, 303-696-1971.
Peter?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I have one thing I wanted to add.
Sure.
And because Ramadan, there's so much, when people have different beliefs, people focus on what's bad.
Yeah.
And there are issues we know that we find with war on terror and all of these other aspects. That's a very small percentage of people involved. But what jihad is a term that's used frequently. And what I wanted to qualify, because when I would work in Islamic countries and I'd be out in the villages in Afghanistan and other places, one of the things I would share with them is my knowledge and awareness that you have two jihads in Islam. You have a greater jihad and a lesser jihad. And Islam, the greater jihad, has always been the focus on inner reflection, spiritual renewal, to become a better human being, a better parent, a better sibling, a better friend, a better child, a better human being in all aspects of the word. That's the greater jihad. The lesser jihad is the warfare to defend the faith. And that's certainly Muslims know that, and some of them hijack it and twist that, but most of them don't. And so it's also in the West, it's important that when you hear jihad, most of it is about spiritual renewal and self-improvement, which we can all relate to.
To the phones, we go to Mike. You're on the radio show. Good morning, and thank you.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Mr. Emery. I may be a little off topic, but since you're on the phone, I thought I'd ask you about Moses leading the Israelis out of the Sinai, or out of Egypt into the Sinai, and then the conquest of Canaan by Joshua. And I read archaeology just a little bit. I've got a great interest in it, but came across a guy by the name of William Devers. He's an archaeologist, biblical archaeologist. And he basically said that the story of Joshua, who was, let's just say, the great general of Moses.
He took over after Moses went up and died.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the story in the Bible, in the Old Testament, of the conquest of Canaan by Joshua and the wholesale destruction and, you know, basically Israel took it over, is really not true or not backed up by archaeological evidence. They've looked at about 50 different cities that have been reviewed, and they don't see signs of destruction.
All right, let's go to Jim. Jim?
Yeah, I guess there's two things. Number one, the history is loaded with archaeological finds on destruction and battles and so forth that took place. There are also accounts within not only the Torah, but also other texts about conflicts ongoing between the Canaanites, between the Philistines, between other groups throughout. And beyond that, this is way off topic of what we're going to do. So I'm not really going to get into a debate about archaeological finds. I'd rather stay on topic.
No, I mean, you can take it where you want to take it, Jimmy. I mean, it's fair game.
Yeah.
Let me back up. I guess the whole story of Moses leading these huge number of people, the Book of Numbers quotes, I don't know what it is, 600,000 or whatever. And anthropologists, basically, and archaeologists would say there's no way the Sinai could support that many people and their animals. And so this whole thing is kind of a built-up narrative that is either exaggerated or totally not true.
Here. What you're talking about, for example, manna from heaven. In other words, it's the idea, part of this becomes into spiritual belief, where, you know, believing that the God of the Israelites provided water, provided food, provided manna from heaven, provided various provisions when they were wandering around the desert after the debacle that happened before the Ten Commandments were brought down with a golden calf and all of that. And so these are all stories. And part of it, because I'm a cultural anthropologist, so I could tell you similar type stories from different cultures.
Yes.
And part of the thing about stories, both religious and cultural tales and legends, is they're meant to instruct and provide instruction for current humans, you know, to learn from. So we'll leave it at that, and I'll go on.
This, Peter, if I may, I'm just drawn to this as the caller is, and Jim, obviously. But if you go to Egypt and you ask the question that you guys are talking about, they get adamant, and they will tell you all of these different things that you see from the millennium, we built them. There were no slaves building these edifices. This was us. And there's no record of somebody else making the claim that they built it. And Jimmy, I think you've been there. I don't know, Mike, if you've been there or
been
not.
I've been up and down the Nile.
Yeah, but they're
by Luxor and Aswan.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Cairo and Alexandria. And across the desert, crossing through.
And they can't find historical record. And a lot of religion, and I'll turn it back to you, Mike, because I love the call, is mythology. And I'm a huge Joseph Campbell fan.
Right.
And Campbell finds these things, as Jim Emery has just said. These stories exist in other places that are almost identical to the stories that we're talking about. Jim, is that fair?
Well, yeah, and also the pyramid, Saqqara was the first one. It was a step pyramid. There are about 75 pyramids within 40-mile radius. Cheops is the oldest one. That's 2650 BC. When you go to the New Kingdom, now you're down by Luxor, and you have the Temple of Karnak on one side of the Nile, and then you can take a boat across to the other side and take a bicycle or car or motorcycle and go around to the Valley of the Kings and the Valley of the Queens, which I've done. And so you find a lot of the history there. And as far as places where the Israelites were believed to have crossed, if you follow the narrative of the story, are also subjective, and there's different places and debates about that. But, you know, we're getting into debating spiritual beliefs of people from thousands of years ago. Yeah. And it's pretty tough to put a pin on it.
Mike, back to you.
Can I just rephrase my...
Of course.
Can I rephrase my question?
Sure.
I guess I now view, based on reading Mr. Devers, Mr. Emery, I guess what I'm asking is, do you believe that the story of Joshua and the conquest of Canaan is more of a story than anything else? And Devers does not find evidence to really strongly back that up. Do you believe it's a story mainly that was made up?
No. I think obviously there was conflict. To what degree it took place is questionable, but there is records, and the caveat is because I've read numerous other archaeological and historical records and mythological records throughout that region, and it's a history of conflict, tribal conflicts and other conflicts going on, and movements of people coming in and out and crisscrossing through the area, throughout that region. You know, if you go through the Middle East and even up into Turkey, when you're out by Erzurum and Gorme and Cappadocia, you have the people, they had so many attacks crossing there that they built underground cities 7 to 12 layers below the earth to get away from invaders crossing.
Jim, it's Peter. Is it not also a history of empire?
Absolutely.
That's why, I mean...
A history of evolving empires and groups and invaders.
That's how... I've learned
the history of the world.
Indeed, but I've learned to read, especially that part of the world, and back to Mike, but it's a history of empire. And, I mean, who is there when something happens? And the Egyptians clearly had an empire, but also did the Greeks, did the Romans, did the Turks, who are the Ottomans, did the British, a series of empires. Is that fair?
There's two things here, and there's a caveat. And Pete, you being a historian, would know.
Just a reader.
The victors write the history as a reader. Well, a good reader and a knowledge of history. The victors tend to write the stories of the conquest of the West and Native Americans, of conquest of different civilizations.
Yeah.
And so, and especially if you're in tribal areas, were they even documenting their history? You have oral traditions that are passed down. And often aren't put pen to paper for generations.
Joseph Campbell, who I met, and Campbell talked about the Bushmen of the Kalahari. They had a legend of a flood.
Yes.
A place that it literally doesn't rain, they had heard of a flood.
And the Kalahari with the clicking,
they're just amazing.
Hitting against the top of the
but those
mouth,
guys,
the clicking in the top communication.
And to try and understand this part of the world that seems to be constantly in conflict, the Middle East, and I've said this many times, we still live with British imperial terms, that the Far East, the Middle East, and the Near East, those are British imperial terms. Those aren't terms placed upon themselves. The Near East for the British would be the Balkans and that part of the world. Then the Middle East would be Israel, Jordan, and then the Far East is Japan, China. They were the most significant, Japan and China. But
and you have more and more Durans walk, which created the Durand Line between British India and Afghanistan at the time, which now is between Pakistan and Afghanistan,
so,
which is debatable because the Pashtuns have a Pashtun state they want to form.
So what, with Mike, who I love his calls, he calls a lot and he's always very, very bright. How do you tell people in the significance of Easter, Passover, and Ramadan? And many of the conflicts are about these three religions, are they not?
Are you asking me?
I don't care. Anybody can jump in if they want.
Go ahead, Mike. Jump in.
Well, I just listened to you two now and just some of my past reading. This is a historical interfamily feud that has no end. It's been going on from time immemorial. And, you know, the people are genetically, linguistically related. It's crazy. It's just a giant family fight with no end.
Jim?
Yeah. When I get to those situations, I dealt with the Karen a lot for generations with her ongoing war with Burma and the Burmese military. And they had a saying, Bomia, who was alive then, and the others had a saying, Ugna Chowda, which is... in Burmese, it means you go crazy, but the Karen variation of it is that their situation with the warfare and the economic problems and all of the issues with the Burmese and their four-cut military programs and all of these things are so complex and so devastating that if you continue to think about it too long, your brain will go dry and then you'll go crazy.
Yeah.
Ugna Chowda.
But who?
That's what the Middle East is like.
Well, yeah.
I've said many times, as you know, guys like Toynbee and the architects of history have all said there are parts of the world that there is no tomorrow. It is only yesterday repeating itself.
And it's very well put, Peter. It's true. And it's how people see things.
Yeah, there is no tomorrow. And this incredible sadness we're watching right now between Israelis and Palestinians. That's been done so many times before. How do you stop it from being done again?
You have the leaders. Neither one of the leaders want a two-state solution.
No.
Sinwar and Netanyahu, neither one want a two-state solution for their own reasons. Neither want to have peace for their own reasons. Sinwar and all the way back to Arafat and others basically wanted to perpetuate it because then they have no accountability for providing city services and other functioning things. The donations go up. From the time Israel invaded, donations to Hamas went up
70%.
And they're skimming millions. Yeah. And the top three leaders in Hamas who live in Doha have a collective wealth of over $11 billion.
Sure.
And so you have all of this. But Netanyahu has his own thing. Netanyahu and the radicals there are adamant that basically they want to destroy and depopulate Gaza and the West Bank, flood it with Israeli settlers, and then annex them into a greater state of Israel. So you look back at the agendas of the leaders, and this is where the misery starts. And it's a matter of making leaders accountable and bringing better leaders in.
Mike, a comment, if you will.
Well, I was just going to ask Mr. Emery if he could point me in the direction of some good people to read. Besides, do you have a go-to author or authors?
No,
regarding?
I have too many. I have a small library myself, and I have a wealth of things that I've picked up. I've traveled and spent a lot of years overseas, so I get things from all over the world, and I continue to utilize the internet to access publications from around the world and be informed and not rely on mainstream media, which is basically not reliable.
No. But
yeah, I'd start with the internet and then try to dive in deeper and find good people to read, because you can't get it from the media. You just can't.
No, you have to. And part of it goes into and Peter identifies himself as a reader. We grew up similar. We were reading books all the time, and a passion for that. There has to be a life. It's lifelong learning. You know, where if you're interested in something, look it up. If you come across a word you don't know, look it up. And it's not unusual. You're reading something and you find a term or a situation you want to learn more about, and you open that up, and before you know it, you got six windows open because you're drilling down, researching, learning more. And Peter's laughing.
It's true.
He and I probably do this all the time.
That's true.
And all of a sudden, like, all these windows are open, and sometimes you do a cut and paste to build files because, wow, that's really interesting. And in reading it, commits it to the memory. And the subconscious misses nothing. The subconscious, self-talk, conversation, thoughts, it's all absorbed in the subconscious. And so you retain a certain amount of this. And it provides contextual framing, which is sorely lacking today with our leaders and with a lot of the population. And this comes from lifelong learning, which will include interactions with people who may have different opinions in you, but it's the power of discernment to respect where they're coming from, how they evolved at that, simply to better understand them so that you can find some common ground and then forge a way ahead that is mutually agreeable to everyone.
There.
To improve things.
Bravo. Bravo. Yeah. I'll tell you, I'm right with you. Totally.
Everybody.
Yeah, you sound like, Mike, yeah. You have the same approach, I think. You know, it's learning and discussing. And we learn through interaction. And you can learn a lot from people you don't even agree with. But you learn, at least I see where they're coming from. I see why they think that.
That's the interesting thing about being drawn to reading and to really to try, not necessarily to understand Passover or Ramadan or Easter, but rather the people that are believers in any one of those notions, and telling that the other two just a bundle of lies.
And you can't say somebody's wrong, because if they're worshiping in the faith and the belief system of their parents, mm-hmm. and their grandparents and their culture and their society for multi-generations, who's to say who's wrong, who's right?
But
it's a selective interpretation of how they, and again, all religions in spirit quest are about making the human a better mm-hmm. human being.
But also the danger and the destruction and the violence that has been caused by those three.
Ethnocentric interpretation. Ours is right, and conversion at the point of the sword.
Absolutely.
Instead of understanding that the role of religion once you've got out of small communities, mm-hmm. was to supersede codified laws and social norms.
Oh, absolutely.
To encourage better behavior among people. So you had multi-layers. You had codified laws, policemen or law enforcement. You had social norms, which, you know, the people around you will say, oh, don't do that or don't do this or do that. And then if nobody else sees you, you have an all-seeing God that can also involve and see you.
All of the above. Mike, thank you. Jim, I want you to stay. Put him on the hold, if you would, please. 710 KNUS, Peter Boyle's lines are open, 303-696-1971. Gearing up, spring breaks here. Arvada, Army, Navy, surplus. I love the place. Been serving customers in Old Town Arvada since 1984. Great spring break deals going on right now. Men's swimsuits, Hawaiian shirts for $14.99. A genuine canvas travel kit bag for $8.99. Mention the ad, get 20% off selected sunglasses, 15% off of water bottles, and they have all the guys and all the different stuff and great discounts on Ocean Beach travel belts and darn tough socks. I got a pair on now. Owner Stephen and the staff are highly knowledgeable, assist you in finding all their gear that you need for your next spring break adventure. And the store, so many cool things to check out. You never want to leave once you step foot into the Arvada Army Navy surplus. Love historical military gear they have on display. Your kids and grandkids will love, and they'll learn something as well. So drop by today and see them. Old Town Arvada. Check them out. ArvadaSurplus.com. ArvadaSurplus.com. Tomorrow's St. Patrick's Day, playing Irish music. Good morning. It's a Saturday, March the 16th, 2024. If you want to speak to Jim Emery, lines are open now all the way, 303-696-1971. The weather, 710 KNUS, high 40s today and much the same tomorrow. The sun comes back Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Carlton, we've talked about the product. Safe, it's natural, has great side benefits, a better sleep, more energy, less joint pain. Your skin will feel and look better. Doesn't interfere with any of your regular meds that you're taking. 100% safe. It's stimulant-free. And the success rate for weight loss. And again, easy one daily dose at bedtime, pills, liquid form, simple and convenient. The medical staff available to answer your questions if you want to call and talk. They are the best. The phone orders, 833-TOP-LOSS, 833-TOP-LOSS. TOPLOSS. Calitrin. Log on to TopLoss, TOPLOSS.com. But again, contains, again, all the right things, amino acids, and includes and everything about making you well. Serotonin levels for better quality sleep and weight loss, safe and natural. And all these 26 years of research, side benefits are there. Doesn't interfere with any of your other regular meds. Again, the order numbers for phones, 833-TOP-LOSS, or log on to toploss.com. Our guest is Jim Emery. He's a cultural anthropologist. He's been a long, long time friend. And this is really an important topic, given as we are during Easter, Passover, and Ramadan. So take them one at a time. Passover, the oldest of the three. But again, every one of these gets questioned. So take it from Jimmy. What does Passover significant of?
Well, when you, of course, most people, they'll explain Passover from the movie The Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Cecil B. DeMille's book, movie. But Passover is the time when Moses was going to Pharaoh, trying to get him to let the people go, that they had the various plagues on Egypt, the locusts, the absence of sun, the hail, all these different, turning the water red. You know, there's all these different things. And then the last plague was the plague where the firstborn would be killed. Now, and that was the angel of death who would be coming down there. In preparation for that, the Israelites were, the Jews at the time, were told basically to mark in blood a marking over the dwelling, each of their dwellings, so the angel of death would pass that. Additionally, part of that is they would break bread. It was unleavened bread, in other words, because it didn't have the full, commemorating the fact they didn't have the full time, they had to leave in a hurry. So they packed their provisions, they packed some food, and they were ready to leave, ready to flee once they got the word from Pharaoh the next day. And so it's a very significant event, you know, marking their liberation from Egyptian captivity, and where they then headed towards, ended up in Cana, with going to the Mount Sinai, where they got the Ten Commandments. And as I mentioned, you had the golden calf, you had the type of issues there, which they were forced basically to wander around in the desert until that generation that had worshipped the calf died off. And then they went up to the point going into Canaan, and Moses, because at one point he was supposed to do something and strike a rock, and he felt awkward to get water out of it. And so anyway, he went up and was taken up to heaven by God directly, and Joshua was given the mantle and the staff, which led the people into Canaan.
Easter.
Well, Easter is the resurrection of Jesus, and you have three holidays grouped together. You have Thursday, Friday, and then Easter, Sunday. Thursday is Monday, Thursday. Monday, Thursday is when Jesus met with his disciples. It's the time of the Last Supper. It's also the origin of the sacraments of Holy Communion. Take, eat, this is my body, which, you know, and so forth. The wafer and the bread at that time. Take, drink, this is my blood, which I pour for you. So in the sacraments of Holy Communion, and this is rather interesting, within Christianity, Christians, when they take communion, are symbolically eating the flesh and drinking the blood of their Savior, which, if this were a Hindu custom, we would scoff at and ridicule. But because it's something that people grow up with, they accept and don't question. The only reason I mention it that way is the powers of discernment, not to be too quick to judge other people for their own beliefs, when you have to understand things we do might seem odd to them as well. So you have Monday, Thursday, which was the Last Supper, and then Judas goes out and does his thing for the 30 pieces of silver. Good Friday is the date in which Jesus was crucified and then taken and buried. Easter is the day when he rose from the dead, and in the biblical sense, Christian's biblical sense, Mary Magdalene went to visit the grave, and there was a stone that had been put in front of the tomb, supposedly because the Romans heard the stories that he might rise, and they wanted to keep the disciples from stealing the body and then claiming he had risen from the dead. Mary Magdalene went, and there was went in and saw the tomb was empty. And then one questioned, you know, what happened. There was an angel inside, and then Jesus appeared to her, you know, showing the nails in his wrist, which would have been in the wrist, not the hands, you know, the way they crucified him. And so, you know, then went back and told the disciples, and they didn't believe her, you know, until he appeared before them. So that's the celebration of that. It's and it's a rebirth. It's a rebirth of the new faith and the new religion and the covenant moving forward. And that aspect, whether it's Phoenix Rising or similar things, is something that you find in cultures around the world. And it's something for people to remember that no matter what is going on in their life, at any point in time, they have a choice of they can't go back. No matter what happened to them, no matter what they did, their fault or somebody else's, they cannot go back and change things. There's no time machines. But they can determine from that point on that they're going to change the ending and change their life's trajectory by soul-seeking and changing the things they know that they need help in, getting help for it, or actively changing habits and taking on good habits and discarding the bad ones and having more of a direction, spending more time focusing on what it is they want out of life and what it is they expect out of themselves in the way of jobs, in the way of meaningful work, in the way of relationships, and the meaning of their personality and how they interact with others, and many more things, including their religious and spiritual beliefs. It could be organized religion or separate spirituality. The spirituality is within the individual.
The final of the trilogy, Ramadan, Islamic holiday. We spoke about Passover. We spoke about Easter. Now, Ramadan.
Ramadan is a spiritual holiday. It's very interesting because we have what we're doing when we're talking about this, Peter, is dealing with the stereotype in the media and dramatization on television and movies. Ramadan is primarily a spiritual event. It's recognition that that's when Allah revealed the Quran through Gabriel, to Muhammad, who then recited it and committed it to memory and passed it on. But it's much more than that. Ramadan, part of the aspect of the sacrifice, in the sense that you're fasting, is not only to put the focus on spiritual things, but the idea of going without food and water, and this is a big theme within Islam, is to better understand and have empathy for the people throughout the world who live in poverty or dire straits, and they don't get enough to eat. They don't have clean drinking water. They have other needs. And so Ramadan's focus is on a spirituality that is really within the individual to go exponentially throughout humanity. And it's also they're encouraged to tithe to the poor, you know, provide iftar meals, which you break the fast with three dates and water, and then you have a big meal after sunset. But you have that, and they provide iftar meals for the poor who may not be able to do it. You make donations to the poor to help them through time. And much of this, and even zakat, which is 2.5% of the wealth, that's a tax, basically. It's a charity tax. Usher, one-tenth of the crop is also for that. And so there's a lot of focus within the tenets of Islam to help people who are having a more difficult time and to tie to them and to be empathetic and understanding to others. And that's really the core beliefs in Islam, that they do get twisted by some radicals the way that some political or humanitarian or religious beliefs might get twisted by people from all faiths and all countries.
Let me look at Lou. Lou, do we take a break or do we take a call? What do we do here? All right, we'll take a break. Jim, hang on again one more time.
Sure.
303, put them on hold if you would, Lou. 303-696-1971. Calls are for Jim. We will do that after the break. Saturday morning, it's the 16th of March. Tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day. And our friends at the Black Eyed Pea here in Colorado, locally owned and operated, Steve and Michelle, I love the restaurants and 8 locations. Make sure, obviously there's one near you. The last time you took your family to the Black Eyed Pea, St. Patrick's Day began yesterday and, of course, today and tomorrow. The Irish Feast, 3 days celebration at the Black Eyed Pea. Yesterday was the March 15th and through Sunday tomorrow. They have corned beef and cabbage, slow cooked overnight, served with 2 sides, or you can get an order the pork bangers and smashed potatoes or Irish pie, shepherd's pie, maybe a Reuben, sliced corned beef, sauerkraut, Swiss cheese, Thousand Island dressing, toasted marble rye. So many choices, all so good. Traditional Irish cheer is available. The Black Eyed Pea, the Black Eyed Pea, the Irish Feast taking place today and tomorrow. I love everything they do at the restaurant. Really just a good group of people. The owners are the best. You'll love it as well. Let them do the cooking for you and keep it in Colorado. Visit the Black Eyed Pea near you. Saturday morning, tomorrow, St. Patrick's Day, March the 16th, 2024. I'm Peter Boyles, 710 KNUS Weather Center weather, high 40s today, much the same again tomorrow. And then sun comes back Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Kind enough to stay. We're going to do just a drop, and he's been with us now for almost 2 hours. Jim Emery is a longtime friend, cultural anthropologist, and doing tying the three great religions of the West together, Judaism, Christianity, and of course Islam. One of the I don't know if it's we say it's a problem, seems to be theocracy. And in Europe, certainly, the idea of the church keeping, and we'll go to the callers in just a second, but the church keeping people on the throne, one of the greatnesses about this country, that is rejected. Jefferson says no national church, but we can see theocracies in the world of Islam. Comment on that, and then we'll go to the calls.
Sure. A couple things, too. And I could talk about this all day, so I don't mind staying on the, you know. And the idea, I think, first of all, we have to back it up. Spirituality is within the individual. They don't need any organized faith to become spiritual. And they can, whatever their beliefs are, it's the idea about striving within the individual, the inner struggle, the greater jihad to become a better person, a better human being within the definitions that you choose to put out. The structure that you're talking about is the basically it's the indictment of humans and human beings, greed, power, personal interest, that with religious leaders, with politicians, with some corporate leaders, and with other some individuals, they will put themselves and their own self-interest ahead of everyone else, even to the detriment of the organization, structure, or community or country they represent. And we've seen that through history. So often.
I mean, whether it's the Romanovs or whether it's, you know, you fill in the blank, using religion as a weapon, certainly. Right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're absolutely correct. And the key is expanding religion from a particular faith to recognizing people can have their own faith that is different than yours and different beliefs, and it doesn't make them any less worthy. It doesn't make them any less spiritual. And when the United States is the most individualistic culture in the world. When you're in Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Latin America, these are collectivist cultures, group-oriented, very different dynamics in how you grow up. Additionally, in the United States, from the time you and I grew up, there's been a significant breakdown of nuclear and extended families, a breakdown of the church and community structure, school and community groups. They're all isolated out there. So what humans can do with the spirituality is reach out to others, and it could be simply a kind word, a recognition, a compliment, validation, motivation, you know, a simple conversation. It's a drive-by passing. You may not see the person again, or maybe you might run into them someplace, but recognizing and validating, understanding that all these weaves that strengthen the individual, keep them centered and keep them focused and keep them productive are gone. They're not there, and there's nothing to replace that. But human beings can do that on an individual level for people, from young people to older people, and certainly the elders who have had the experiences and some wisdom they've accumulated along the way can share this with others, even if it's simply empathizing with their situation, but in giving them a bit of hope that will keep them on track rather than going off the edge.
We got four lines. We'll go to Don on line one. You're with Jim Emery, Peter Boyles. Don, good morning and thank you.
Hi, good morning. This is so interesting. And I'll try to be quick because I'm certainly not a communicator like you all are. I was in the Middle East for 5 years. I lived in Qatar and worked there and knew, you know, just many, many Muslim friends and everything. And
in Doha?
Went through the wrong. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was working on the new airport. And So I got to, you know, learned about Ramadan because living in the U.S., you typically it's like, what is that, you know? And but I learned about it and what they did and how they fasted and everything. And it was, I think, you know, to give them the feeling of if they didn't have, you know, means, how do the other people feel and things like that and giving and stuff. And I guess one real quick story, I started traveling quite a lot, and I was in Jordan riding in a van with just a handful of people down to Petra. And and the driver, you know, didn't really speak much English. And of course I didn't speak, you know, I have a couple words in Arabic, but I would see police up ahead and I would point and he would shake his head, you know, if they were like, you know, if he was going fast or something. And we started chatting a little bit and he said, I believe in Jesus. And it was interesting to me because I didn't really know what they thought. He just said, I just think he was a person, and, you know, kind of like that. Yeah, not the Son of God. Do you know what I mean? And
right.
It just made me realize, and like you guys are saying, you know, if you're just pleasant and kind to other people, that's and listen, it's it goes a long way. So I guess that's all I really.
That's a great call. That's a great input. And Muslims call Jesus Isa, and they recognize him as a prophet.
Yeah. Because in a way, I used to think, oh, they don't. Not that I'm a huge religious, but I am Christian, and I didn't realize if they even believed in Jesus, but they said, oh, yes, he's a real person. We believe in him. We just think a little differently, you know.
Muhammad is then the last prophet, James?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and also, and I won't get into this, the end of times when Isa comes by and within Islamic beliefs, he kills Dajjal, which is the false prophet. This is a whole other thing that supposedly takes place in Dabiq, which is a town in Syria near the Turkish border. You know, where things took place with another group running around that area.
Great call.
So that's yeah.
Well, thanks
good
very much.
Thank you. All right, let's go to Sandy on line two. Sandy, you're on the radio show. It's a Saturday. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter. God bless you and Jim, and an excellent show, and Lewis is doing a great job. I have a question for Jim regarding when Jesus was being crucified and afterwards the miracles that were happening, the earthquakes, the dancing sun.
The ripping of the Torah, the curtains.
Yes, the veil.
And the veils being ripped and the clouds and the storm and all that, right?
I find that fascinating. And well, and all the signs that were given to us, and that it was, he really was God incarnate.
Okay.
Oh, Jim?
Oh, okay.
No, I mean.
Well, my thought, I mean, that's the way it was recorded. And, you know, then it's a matter, this is where belief comes through. Do you believe that actually occurred, or was it the way people wrote it up? And
well,
I wasn't there. No, you weren't there. But the thing is, I grew up in the same faith you did, so this is the way we learned it. But the caveat, and this is an excellent point you're making, is that other faiths also grew up with certain beliefs that they believed to be true within the faith of their families and their ancestors.
Correct.
What's the result of? What's the result? Back to if I can go to Sandy first or to Jim.
Yeah,
what is the result of what these last couple of hours we've been talking about? What's the result of Passover or the result of Ramadan or the result of Easter?
I think it's a confirming of your faith and, like you said, what you believe, how Jim put it. What is your true belief or what you hold in your heart is dear and what you hope is true? Mm-hmm.
Your spiritual benchmarks within respect to faith that they believe in and recognize and celebrate, and it's benchmarks to refocus on your respective faith, and also extrapolating beyond that, beyond the tenets and beliefs of your faith, which revolve around being a better human being.
It is interesting that two of the three will have in the past converted by the sword. Judaism does not convert. The other two are more than willing or have been more than willing. What do you do with that, Jim?
Well, and they don't convert, but they do convert.
Oh, yeah.
Because when Joshua went in, he, you know, and they had the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill, except mm-hmm. for, bup, 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 bup. You know, you're going in with mm-hmm. the Canaanites. And then you have all the others. And, you know, you had a lot of people were being killed in that takeover. And then throughout, where there was a concern because you had all of these gods from Moloch to Baal to all the other gods around there, and there was a concern about even taking in the women because they would bring their religion with them, which actually occurred because one of the things with capturing women at that time and also having polygamy, one of the main reasons they did that is to increase the birth rate
and
make more soldiers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's... Go ahead. I'm sorry, Sandy. Please.
And Lebensborn program. The Nazis did the same thing with the Lebensborn program.
Yeah, sure.
But that's another story.
There's another little play in here is when Joshua went over, Joshua and Caleb went over. That's when mm-hmm. they discovered the Nephilim. The giants.
Yes.
How about that one?
Woo, that's a whole.
You guys, here's what I'm going to do because our lines are jammed. Let me throw everybody on hold. Sandy's on hold. Sure. Jim's on hold. All the callers are on hold. This is too good. So we will continue with this. It's a Saturday morning, March the 16th, 2024. Cultural anthropologist and longtime friend Jim Emery is here. Did a lengthy piece on Ramadan, and it's turned into this. So it's good stuff. Everybody hang on to their hats. It's going to be a pretty nice-looking day, high 40s, much the same tomorrow. And then the sun comes back Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Stay right here, and let's see, one line's open, 303-696-1971. Lou, it's all yours.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.